It's back.
It's back.
The goal song's back, and got to hear it quite a few times last night.
Seven times. For those who weren't sure if it was the goal song and needed to hear it six more times to confirm that it was the old goal song. I like that. I know it has a name. I don't care what its name is, because its name now is Old Goal Song.
Indeed, it was fun to hear. We're taping this on a Thursday night, so the day after Lars Eller's big four-goal game. Not sure when you decided to download this and listen to it, but thanks for downloading. You're listening to the 2-4 podcast.
That sexy voice you hear right there, that's one Sean O'Neill. I'm Zach Vanoss, and as you said, thank you for tuning in. And I'm glad we're doing it today. We considered doing it before the Jets game. But the tone, very different, thanks to Lars Eller. And the only highlight so far of the 2011-2012 season.
Oh, yeah, by far. By far.
All right, let's just dive into it. Our first podcast of 2012. And we'll open it up with the opening 20. Question number one. Let's go back a year and look at the year that was 2011. So far, obviously, the first portion 2011-2012 season, not so good. Meanwhile, the Habs in 2010-2011 were fairly successful. So what was your favorite moment of 2011? What was your favorite Canadiens moment?
Well, like you said, clearly not anything that happened in the first half of this season.
Although 2012 has been amazing.
My bet, yeah, we're off to a good start in 2012. My favorite moment from 2011 was actually when PK scored the tying goal against the Bruins.
Yep.
And I know obviously we went on to lose that game, but that doesn't even really diminish that moment for me. That was just a great moment. You know, it looked like all hope was lost. The Habs come storming back. He ties it with whatever time was left. And, you know, I was absolutely positive we were going to win that game at that point after he scored. Obviously that didn't happen, but it was still a great moment from a great young player. And I thought, you know, as soon as it went in, I thought, well, this is, you know, the beginning of the PK legend. I think I thought we were going to go on to win that game and win that series. That didn't happen, but that doesn't diminish that one moment for me, which I thought was really the highlight of the calendar year.
I completely agree. That was my thought when I wrote that question, was that was the moment for me that sticks out as, I mean, we've got it in our intro and all. Is it like a minute 58, minute 57, something like that left? Game 7, I mean, come on. I know, as you say, we went on to lose that game. But when that went in, I was convinced we were winning. I called home. I was talking to my mom. I was like, okay, I'll call you back when we win. I actually said that. Do I regret it now? No, not at all. I really, because that was, like you say, that was a highlight moment. And yeah, so we go on to lose to Stanley Cup champs in overtime in Game 7. But come on. That's setting the table for a potential career from Subban that some people are for some reason off that. I still love PK. Got a Subban t-shirt in my stocking for Christmas, so I'm still on the PK train. And yeah, that was definitely my favorite moment. That was the moment that all throughout the summer kept me itching for another hockey season. I just kept playing that moment over and over in my head and thinking, all right, I love this game. I love this team. Let's do another one. And then things derailed at the beginning of this season. But Lars Eller, he gave us a little reason to believe last night.
You gotta believe. Number two. What are your thoughts on the Habs prospects who played at the World Junior Tournament, which is concluding tonight?
Choke artists. No, I mean, what a fantastic game between Russia and Canada. Obviously, you know, not the desired result, but I just think the fact that Montreal had three guys on the team is a start. It's a short tournament. I especially like Gallagher, though. He's the one that stood out for me in those final moments when Canada was trying to tie it. He was on the ice. He was right at the net. I mean, going forward in the future, that's the kind of pedigree I'd love to see come into a Bleu Blanc Rouge uniform. And so Gallagher, he certainly impressed me, and I'm excited for him to eventually make his debut on this team.
Yeah, it's funny. Obviously you think instinctively that, you know, if a guy makes it onto the World Junior team, if he's one of the 20-odd best under-20 players in Canada, that he's going to be a future superstar. And that's not really the case. It's a pretty mixed bag in terms of, you know, success at the World Junior level translating into success at the NHL level. And we've had a lot of, you know, Kyle Chipchura was the captain of Team Canada, for Christ's sake, and I thought he was going to be a great, very good NHLer, and he was a non-factor. But that being said, Gallagher looked great, and the other one I'm really excited for is Tenorti, who I thought looked really good for the Americans. So, you know, Beaulieu, maybe a bit less so. You know, yeah. Some of these guys I think will be maybe, you know, fringe NHL guys, but I think Gallagher's a really nice piece missing forward. He really impressed me.
Yeah, no, I we talked about on the podcast in the past that, you know, we don't watch many, if any, kind of junior games or anything like that. Gallagher's a name that kept kind of coming to the forefront as somebody to look at, and this was kind of my first real chance to see what he could do, and he came as advertised. So from the tournament, I mean, too bad for Team Canada, and we'll probably, you know, we'll get into that a little bit in later in the podcast, but no, I liked what I saw from him. Speaking of guys and reaching potential, what is Lars Eller's ceiling?
Anything short of 4 goals a night at this point will be a disappointment.
I completely agree. Like, this going forward, we should expect that, right?
I would think so.
Yeah.
What is Lars Eller's ceiling? You know, he's still really young. We forget that sometimes because he's basically in his second season now, and, you know, it's, it seems like he's played a good chunk of games in the NHL, which he has, but he's still really, really young. I remember earlier in the year, he just had a sick pass, and I tweeted something to the effect that he was a future All-Star, and, you know, one of our fellow bloggers, Damon Thomas Anderson, kind of said, you know, settle down. I don't think he's quite that level, and he's probably right. I think Eller, not the same type of player, but I see him as a Plekky-type player. A good top six forward, you know, good for 60 to 70 points a season, borderline All-Star type guy. I think if you get that out of him, you know, I think that's obviously a nice piece to have, and that's maybe not his ceiling, but I think that's sort of the most realistic good scenario that we can expect out of him.
Yeah, one question I kind of had thrown in the bag. We're not going to do it in the opening 20 because we had a variety of Lars Eller options. But one was going to be, is Lars Eller the next Jan Bulis, in that Bulis was the last Hab to score 4 goals? And I mean, well, who remembers? I forgot that Bulis was on the team until I remembered that he was the last Hab to score 4 goals in a game. So, I mean, there's potential, you know, but it felt, Let's admit it, last night felt a little bit more special and felt a little bit more significant than the time Bulis scored 4, which I sort of remember, but that's it. And I'm convinced Eller's 4-goal performance is going to be, you know, that's a game you'll remember. And as far as ceiling, I know we're out of time on that one, but yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think he can make some All-Star teams going forward. So since the question's ceiling, yeah, I'll put it as a 2- or 3-time All-Star and a good center for this team going forward, somebody we can rely on.
Number 4, have you noticed any difference in the way that the team plays now that Randy Cunningworth has had some time with the team?
Yeah, actually, there is a little bit of a difference. It's obviously going to take some time, and I think he still obviously coaches to some degree within that defensive system that Jacques Martin had in place. But, I mean, last night, case in point, it was 3-2, and I thought we were headed for the same old once again with this team. And instead, they kept the pedal to the metal. They kept going at the Jets and, you know, eventually racked up 7 goals. And I'm convinced you would not have seen that happen under Jacques Martin. So that alone, I think, is a reason to say, yeah, we're seeing something a little bit different under Anglo Cunningworth.
I think Jacques Martin would have somehow been upset had we scored 7 goals.
Oh, yeah. He would. Well, Jacques Martin.
I think he would have put the brakes on it.
Lars Eller 4-3. Would not have scored 4 goals under Jacques Martin. Jacques Martin would have had him benched for sure. That wasn't a joke.
Yeah, like you said, there's. No, I know. There's been some difference. It hasn't been night and day, but they've opened it up a little bit just because you can't be any more buttoned down than they were under Martin. And, you know, Eller has 4 goals. Camilleri's starting to heat up a little bit. Cole's still doing his thing because Stetson's been playing relatively well lately, and it's not an offensive juggernaut, but I think Cunningworth realized that if this team's going to make anything resembling a push, they need to open things up a little bit and find the back of the net a bit more often and not be so rigid and so systematic about everything. So, you know, he's still a bit of a system guy. It's still a defense first team, but the team's not excruciatingly boring to watch anymore. There has been a bit of an opening up.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it was David Desharnais who said after the game that prior to the game, Cunningworth said, let's start this game pissed off tonight. Let's go out there pissed off and play some angry hockey. And I can't see Jacques Martin saying that. We're going to be angry tonight? No, I don't think so. Is Josh Georges the next captain of this team?
That seems to be the consensus. I mean, that was the consensus even before he signed this deal.
Yeah,
and, you know, after he signed it, the phrase that everyone was throwing around was, you know, if and when Gionta leaves, and whenever and however that might occur, when there is a vacancy, Georges is the next guy to wear the C. that seems to be the consensus. Who knows what the situation will be on the team.
There was a time we thought Higgins was the next captain.
Yeah, exactly. So who knows what the situation will be down the road. But, I mean, he looks, you know, from this vantage point, he looks like an obviously a pretty good candidate. He's here for the long term. He's got all the sort of characteristics you would want in a captain, I think. He's a team-first guy. He's a gritty guy. He's, you know, not shy to speak his mind on the ice or, I would assume, in the locker room either. So I think it's a good choice. Who knows if it'll happen, but if they're putting odds on it, he'd be the favorite, I think.
I definitely, like you say, everybody assumes he's the captain. I think from what I mean, I'm not obviously in the locker room at all, but I hear the same audio that everybody else hears, and you hear the comments that everybody else makes, and there seems to be a consensus that he's the next guy, and I was very happy with the signing. I don't think, some people think that we paid a bit too much for a guy who, as terms of statistics, doesn't do much, but this is a guy who's all about intangibles, and I think he's definitely a solid leader. And we've said this before, the Craig Rivé trade looks absolutely stunning, but if you get Max Pacioretty and the next captain of the Habs out of that deal, I can't argue with that. So I have a feeling, yeah, Josh Georges, since he's here for the long haul, whenever it is Gionta's time to go, he's going to be the guy that definitely takes over at that point.
My up or you?
You're up, bud.
All right.
And we're on number six. I know it's hard to follow.
We're on number six. Was Wednesday's win over the Jets a win-win for Cunningworth's situation?
Well, like I just alluded to with the Dernier comment, I think, to a certain degree, yeah, let's get pissed off. And also, I mean, with these bullshit protests that's apparently planned for outside the Bell Center on Saturday, right? They're planning that stupid thing?
Yeah, I was under the impression that it was actually going to be the Wednesday night game against the Jets, but yeah, it is. I think it's the big protest is the game against.
Will they get more? This isn't the question at all in the thing, but will they get more or less people than the Kovalev protest?
I love the things we choose to protest about. I'm gonna go with less.
I hope so, but I mean, like if they'd lost last night embarrassingly, or even, you know, every loss at this point is kind of embarrassingly the way the season's been going. If they'd lost last night, there might have been a little steam just based on that. I don't, you know, but the fact that I think Eller pretty much helped put that fire out for whatever protest is coming. I think the win last night, I think the let's play pissed off from the get-go that Cunningworth said. Yeah, I think last night was completely win-one for Cunningworth. If not win-one for Cunningworth, win-one for us. Go out and win one for ourselves. Let's put a stamp on this thing. This is our place. This is, you know, we don't know what the hell's going on, why we can't win. Things aren't going well, but let's go out and play pissed off. This has all been bullshit. This is going to be about us. And by the end of the night, with Lars Eller going out to center ice and getting the whole crowd into it and waving and all that stuff, at that point, it became win one for us, win one for Habs fans. You know, it was a real, there was a family feel in terms of what went on last night. And so I think it was win one for whatever, you know, you want to put the stamp on.
Yeah, and part of me wonders, you know, why the hell did it take so long? But you got the impression last night that, you know, the team knows that, holy crap, we got to do something soon if there's any chance of turning this thing around. And whoever you're doing it for, whether you're doing it for your coach, you're doing it for yourself, you're doing it for the fans, they had to do something, and they finally did last night. And like you said, the reception at the end of the game was great, a great atmosphere in the Bell Center last night. And I think it's probably nice for the coach for one, and for the fan, the players for another, to be reminded that, you know, this place is, for all the crap that the fans and the media put you through, this is a pretty fun place to play when you're winning.
Yeah, no kidding. Speaking of, you know, getting things back on track, is Mike Camilleri back?
I think so. And we, you know, this is the type of player that he is. He'll kind of disappear and hit a bunch of posts for a stretch, and then he'll go on a hot streak. And he's taken a lot of crap lately, some of it deserved, some of it not. But, you know, I always kind of knew that if you just kind of wait this thing out, he'll get hot. He's too talented, and he is a streaky player, but he's too talented to, you know, go a whole season and only net 15 goals or what have you. And this hot streak was coming. He's looked really good the last couple games. You know, he's not gripping the stick quite so tight, and I think he's about to go on one of those hot streaks we've seen out of him so many times before.
Yeah, no, back to the guy who could potentially score 40. No, he's not there yet. But everything I heard coming out of the team was that if there was one player that you could say was unhappy with Jacques Martin, that needed to switch from Martin, it was Mike Camilleri. And I think the proof's kind of in the pudding on this one. Cammy's played fairly solid hockey since they got rid of Jacques. And I think going forward, we're going to continue to see him... You know, as you say, he's not going to be gripping the stick quite as hard. He's getting his goal. So, back, that depends on what your definition of back is. But I think what we saw in the first half, we're not going to see in the second half from Mike Camilleri.
No, and I think when all said and done, you know, he'll finish with whatever it is, 25, 28 goals. And we'll say, actually, that was a pretty decent season. All
yeah,
things
I
considered.
Think so. I hope so.
Hope so, too. Number 8, which Hab will play in the All-Star game?
There's got to be one, right?
Yes.
Well, let's go with the guy who has, I think, every single podcast we've done all season has been given a star. I've got to say Eric Cole. He's been the most dependable, the best player we've had all season long. I really would have put Carey Price down even as soon as, you know, a month ago, I think we had this conversation, and Price was the guy. But no, at this point, I think they've got to select one Hab. Eric Cole's my guy.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Patches looked like he was headed to the All-Star game. He's cooled off a little bit. Price, you know, I'd have to sort of go down the list in the East, and, you know, Thomas and Lundqvist are obviously headed there. And
well, Price has been very average.
Yeah, he's been average by his standards.
Yeah,
you
that's
still
what I
argue
by his standards, yes.
You could argue he's still maybe the third best goalie in the East this year. I'm not, you know, I'd have to look at the list. But yeah, I think Cole's the most deserving at this point, for sure.
Now let's get into the Eric Cole thing a little bit, because... We have given him a star every week, and once again last night, he seemed like, you know, despite the fact that Kostitsyn had just a fantastic pass to Eller, despite the fact that Eller clearly stole the show, there was still, Eric Cole was a big part of what went down on the ice last night. This guy, there were people saying we overpaid for him way too much in the offseason, and I couldn't disagree more at this point. At the time I wrote, you can find on the Montreal Bias, I said I didn't think we overpaid for him at all, and at this point I almost think we got a deal on this guy. Having him for the next 3 seasons after this one, I love that fact. I love Eric Cole. He's been just fantastic for us. If there's one guy who should be headed to Ottawa, it's Cole. Alright, and hold on, I'm reading these off my brand new iPhone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that, that's all. All right, this is... I need you to explain this to me, because I couldn't quite grasp it, but I feel like you're a man who... he knows his things. Explain to me why a dildo was thrown on the ice after Eller's third goal last night.
Not quite sure why I'm the man to explain this to you.
You're not quite sure. Who am I going to turn to? Who am I turning to, Sean?
I can't tell you, to be honest. I was on Puck Daddy, I think it was... after the game, and I didn't notice it when it happened.
No, nor did I. That would take come on, to see that on TV, you'd have to be looking for it.
If you're looking for a dildo
on the ice after 3 goals, I don't know, man.
So I noticed it on Puck Daddy. There's a little post about, you know, someone in Montreal threw a sex toy on the ice after the goal, and it just raises so many questions. Why'd you have it on you in the first place?
This was the first question. I feel let's break this down into the stages it needs to be broken down into. All right, stage one, because the Habs haven't scored for shit this season. Odds of a hat trick last night weren't great.
No, they weren't.
So he or she has it on them to begin with, for some reason. So I can't explain that part. I'm assuming you can't either.
I cannot, no.
No, okay, good. I'm kind of glad you can't explain that. Step two. Now, you've been to the Bell Center. I've been to the Bell Center. We may or may not have tried to sneak alcohol into the Bell Center in our past. I won't say one way or the other, but it's not easy. They search you. And you know, that was a significantly large enough adult play thing that I feel like a pat down. I feel like a pat down. We give you some indication that it's on their person. So how do you think they got it in there?
Well, I don't know. Maybe the security guard found it and said, well, okay, knock yourself out. It's not really illegal.
Can you knock yourself out doing that?
I think you can, yeah. It was substantial.
It was substantial. No
so,
question.
Yeah, they snuck it in, and then everything broke their way because they had a chance to throw it on the ice. I don't know if that was the intention or not. before the game began.
Are you thinking the moment of Eller's hat trick and as well as whatever they were doing that they had it in their hand, they couldn't help but throw it on the ice. serious breakdown. But seriously, what the fuck?
I don't know. It was a funny only in Montreal ending to the night.
No kidding. All right, our final question. Let's hear it.
What would you do to fix the Habs at this point?
All right. You ready to get into this?
I am.
This is our final question. So this is going to lead into the next little jibber jabber that we got going on here. And I was thinking this because I'm not going to get overexcited about the fact that the Winnipeg Jets lost to us by a 7-3 score. Because the Winnipeg Jets are not a good road team. They're also not a very good hockey team. Last night could easily, a week ago we were excited about a big win over the Senators as well. So
yeah.
I'm not going to get overexcited about what happened. I like it. I think in terms of finding little nuggets of happiness in the rather depressing season that has been so far, last night was fantastic. But I'm not letting it go to my head. So now we got to figure out going forward, what the hell do we do with this team? Because not but 9 months ago, as we alluded to earlier in this podcast, this was a team that was one goal away from eliminating the eventual Stanley Cup champions. And coming into this season, perhaps this was our own mistake estimating this team, but we thought this is a team that's a couple pieces away from being legitimate, finals, at least semifinals contender. And now they're closer to the basement than they are to a playoff spot. So something's got to be done. And I know the people out there are calling for rebuild, but I don't think you need to do a full-on rebuild. I believe that what's going on with this team right now, there's a very, very good chance that you could actually do a speed rebuild. Not a speed rebuild in a desperation, but, the very few organizations, when they go to rebuild, already have the kind of pieces in place that the Canadians do right now. I mean, as I've alluded to in the forum yesterday, Carey Price between the pipes, right there, you've got yourself a franchise goalie. I mean, that's one of the hardest things to get when you're trying to put together an eventual contender. PK Subban, clearly another huge piece. Other young talents, Lars Eller, Tomas Plekanec, David Dernais, clearly Max Pacioretty. So there's a good base in place. And then you've got guys like Eric Cole, who I think you want to keep around for veteran presence. And I've spoken about this in the past. I love Brian Gionta. I've got my Gionta jersey. I've got, he's the same height as me, so I tend to like anybody who somehow made it in the NHL while still being only 5'7". But I think there are guys, and I put Gionta on this list, who, if the right players can come back, perhaps at this point you have to consider shopping them. And I put guys like Gionta, maybe Camilleri, certainly guys like Gill, certainly guys like Andre Kostitsyn. There's plenty of players, Travis Moen for one, who you could start to get back pieces, and it doesn't need to be a dramatic 7, 8, 9 year rebuild. I think by next season, you put the guys on the ice that you see as your core, as the team that you're going to eventually take to maybe contend for a cup eventually. And I think you can do that by next year. Now, maybe next year's team still finishes in 10th place, but I think there's a rebuild that can be done, not overnight, but much quicker than, say, it was done in Chicago or Pittsburgh or now as we're watching it at Edmonton.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. I think we're January 5th right now, so it's not like the trade deadline's imminent.
No.
I think, best case scenario, if last night's win over the Jets was the spark that we've all been waiting for, and this team goes on a hot streak, I don't think there's any scenario in which this team should become a buyer.
No.
Best case, if the team gets hot, you say, okay, this is the team going forward. We'll see what we've got. If we get into the playoffs, that's great. If not, fine.
Yeah.
I don't think that's very likely. The math is getting difficult at this point. But it's exactly as you said. There's a difference between admitting that a season is lost and going for the full-on rebuild. Everyone's been throwing around rebuild, saying, we need to scrap this thing altogether, which I think is a bit of a panic reaction to just a bad year.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Let's not forget that this team's made the playoffs every year but one since the lockout. Had the best record in the East a couple seasons ago, made it to the Eastern Conference Finals 2 years ago.
Yep.
It's took the Stanley Cup champs to overtime in Game 7 last year. This is a, you know, a franchise that's been pretty good for a big stretch now, and I don't think they're necessarily trending downwards for the medium term or for the long term. I think, like you said, there's a lot of nice pieces moving forward, and 2-3 weeks from now, if we're still treading water, if we're still in 10th, 11th, 12th place in the East, once you get closer to the trade deadline, you say, you know, okay, we're not making the playoffs this year. It's not, we're not happy about it, but it happens. You're not going to make the playoffs every single year. And like you said, there are pieces you can get a nice draft pick in return, even for a guy like Hal Gill. And, you know, Hal Gill is not a world beater, but if you're, I don't know, if you're Philly, if you're Pittsburgh, if you're Detroit, if you need a veteran defenseman, you go after guys like that. And teams are willing to pay a pretty high premium for pretty mediocre players come trade deadline time if they think that's the man that will put them over the edge. So I think they've still got a little bit of time to see what they've got. If they don't think, turn things around, like you said, okay, you sort of, you know, you wash your hands of this season, you admit that it just wasn't our year for whatever reason, and you trade some of those pieces, you get some pieces in return, and next year's a new year. And I still think there's enough talent on this team that, you know, they can make the playoffs in 2012, 2013. And now a year from now, if we're having this discussion again, if next year the team looks equally inept, then maybe you start to talk about blowing stuff up because, you know, like I said, the arrow is obviously trending downwards. But I don't want to say this season's a fluke because there is, you know, a lot of work that the team needs to do, and there's some stuff on this team that's really not great going forward. But, you know, I'm not saying you have to blow everything up just because there was a season with a lot of injuries and a lot of controversy and a lot of bad bounces.
No, and that's exactly it. I mean, there's pieces that can be sold off, and I think, as we said, the math isn't there for this season. I just don't see the playoffs being a very viable option unless this team becomes essentially one of the top five teams in the NHL from here to the end of the season. That's pretty much the only way you can make the playoffs when you get kind of behind the eight ball like this. So, you know, but as you said, this does feel like something similar to a fluke season. There's nothing in me that would be shocked if you took the exact same guys, exact same team, including the Gomez contract and the Markov injury. You took that same thing, put it into next season, and I think you could still have a top six NHL team. You know, breaks happen here and there. Teams get in a funk, and I believe that's what's going on. There's, as I said, really strong. I know people might disagree with this, but I think there's a really strong base with this organization. So you see what you get back for a guy like Moen, who's having himself a pretty decent season. You see what you get back for Gill. If the right offer comes along for a Michael Camilleri, Brian Gionta, in some perfect world, Scott Gomez, which obviously isn't going to happen, but any, you know, any of those guys who, I mean, Brian Gionta, come on. Don't tell me that a team with the room to fit him under the cap come trade deadline isn't going to pay very, very nicely for a guy like Brian Gionta, who's proven to, you know, he doesn't really go through bad stretches once you get past the 1st of December. He scores, he's got great leadership, and this is a guy I'd rather not see traded. But, you know, if the right piece comes back, then maybe you pull the trigger. I mean, if someone wants Thomas Cabrera, they can have him as well, you know. So I think you have to play it smart here going forward, and that's going to be the tough part, because I don't know what the situation is right now with Pierre Gauthier and Jeff Molson and who's really making the calls. Like, I've got to assume there's some sort of kind of trade freeze on for Gauthier to keep him from trying to save his job by making desperate moves, right?
I would hope so. And I think any smart franchise, I mean, it's tough. You know, you don't want to make a guy a dead man walking because that's kind of a recipe for paralysis. But at the same time, you know, they've got to admit that, look, you've sort of put yourself in this situation, and, you know, we're not necessarily saying you're getting fired, but, you know, we're not going to let you mortgage the team's medium and long-term future just to try and save your ass. I would assume there are some sort of mechanisms in place to avoid the short-term panic move by Gauthier.
Well, Jeff Molson got on Twitter today. I don't know what that means, but he joined Twitter today.
He did.
Yeah, started following him immediately. He congratulated Lars Eller. I think he was pumped up by what happened last night at the Bell Center. But speaking of mortgaging the franchise, let's talk about the Ducks scenario right now, because essentially they've said at this point, everyone except for Solani and Koivu, who have no trade clauses, is fair game. Do you believe that, or is that are they just trying to fire up the guys?
I think almost everyone's fair game if the right offer comes along.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, I don't think they're going to have a fire sale, but I think if the right offer comes along for a Getzlaff, for a Ryan, for a Perry, maybe they'll make the deal. I mean, I can't imagine Perry, you know, the reigning Hart Trophy winner, being shipped out of town just because they had a bad year. But I kind of take them at their word on that. And, you know, but speaking of Anaheim, you know, another team that I think is incredibly talented, more talented than Montreal, although they're a bit top-heavy,
Quack.
But... they're another example of a team
quack. I'm just trying to do that in the background as you discuss them.
Just kind of, for whatever reason, has had a crappy year. And I wouldn't blow things up if I were the Ducks personally.
Nor would I.
Think that's sort of a panic thing, like you said. But these things happen to teams, just to go back to what we were talking about. You know, the Rangers missed the playoffs, or damn near missed the playoffs last year. You know, they're probably the second best team in the East now. Philly had that year where they finished with one of the worst records in the NHL, and they rebounded back to being amongst the league's elite. You know, unless you're Detroit and New Jersey for that stretch that they had, every team has down years, and I still kind of think that's what the Habs are going through.
So, is there... I mean, obviously, in a perfect world, of course you'd welcome Perry or Getzlaff or Bobby Ryan on your team, but knowing the price that the Ducks are going to demand, what would you be willing to pay for any of those guys?
Oh, man, especially for... I mean, I guess you'd have to say...
Who's your boy? Who's your boy on that team?
Getzlaff.
Getz,
I think,
okay.
You know, Getzlaff's been the type of player that Montreal's been missing for 20 years now, mm-hmm. that we've gone on and on and on and on about. He's also been, you know, sort of a pet project for Montreal fans, because we all know that he was available the year we took Kostitsyn, and that's always the example that comes up.
Yeah, but... everyone acts like Getzlaff went second and Kostitsyn went first overall.
Yeah.
I don't get why Montreal fans are convinced we're the only team that passed on Getzlaff.
I think it's just because they see that big power forward in the center, and, you know, he's the player we've been looking for, and he's regressed.
No, that's fair.
There was a point a couple years ago where I thought Getzlaff was, you know, bound to be one of the top five players in the NHL and a future Hart Trophy winner. And
yeah.
There's not quite that buzz around him anymore. He has, you know, he's been below his standards for a couple of years. But maybe he just needs a change of scenery. And, you know, I wouldn't throw everything in the ring for him. But if Montreal could get a player like Ryan Getzlaff, I think that would be a really big coup. What would I give up to get him? It's tough to say.
I guess the better question in this scenario is who doesn't go in exchange for one of these guys? Who are you not willing to part with?
The only two completely untouchable players for me are Price and Subban.
Subban for Perry, straight up.
Straight up, you have to do that.
Yeah, okay.
So if you can get a 50-goal scorer and a Hart Trophy winner, you got to do it.
So Price is your really only... your non-touchable.
I suppose, yeah. I suppose.
Because, yeah, rule out, obviously, Sidney Crosby. There's very few players in the league I would take for Price even straight up at any point.
Yeah, likewise. I mean, like you said, franchise goalies, they're not a dime a dozen. You don't give one up really for anything, as far as I'm concerned.
Let's loop this back to the Josh Georges thing, speaking of Price. The fact that his best friend Josh Georges is now signed for the long, long term, that's got to bode well as well for how long we're going to ink Price and keep him in a Montreal uniform.
It can't hurt. I mean, I've never been terribly worried about losing
No,
Price.
Same here. I mean, this organization isn't completely stupid.
And, you know, weirder things have happened, and obviously you want to get him locked up, but he's the face of the franchise. He is the franchise, you know, for the foreseeable future.
And yep.
You got to think that Montreal's going to do whatever they can and whatever they have to keep him. So stranger things have happened. You don't want it to get to the situation where another team just blows him away with an offer and he signs without even consulting the Habs. But I can't imagine they'll let him go. I'm not too worried about that.
And, I mean, they're already thinking outside of their own box. We didn't used to negotiate within season. That used to be the policy of the Habs in the Gainey / Gauthier era. And day one that they're able to talk to Josh Georges, boom, he signed to 6 years. It seems like things are going to have changed a little. I have to believe that the RFA contracts coming to Subban and Price. I like that trio, Georges, Subban, Price, going forward. I mean, all things considered, if you get those guys inked at decent prices, you can build around those. And that kind of speaks to what we've been talking about in the whole, not rebuild, but the insta rebuild that you can kind of do. You've got the players in place already that are going to be instrumental to moving forward. See what you can add to that, but no need to panic as well. And now we talk to Steph Darwish. All right, so we're talking to Steph Darwish once again, our girl at the game last night.
It was.
Finally, happy times at the Bell Center.
It was my first live win of the season.
Well, you and most people.
You're right, actually. I think you're right. It was probably for most people. And it was electrifying. They did the wave.
Yeah, they were even showing the wave on TV, which usually they ignore. But
I don't think the wave has happened at the Bell Center in like 5 years.
Has it not?
No one does the wave anymore. I think it's very like 80s, 90s to do the wave, no?
Yeah, my connection with the wave is at Expos games at the Olympic Stadium. And that was only because people, it's baseball, so you got to do something while nothing's happening.
That's true. Anyway, it was just absolutely amazing to watch that game yesterday.
Yeah, take us through, because, I mean, on TV it's one thing, but everything I've been hearing today, everyone was saying at least this season, and even for a bit of a stretch, the regular season, it's been a while since a game kind of blew the roof off the place at the Bell Center like that.
Yeah, 100%, I agree with that. You know what, I took a friend of mine from Winnipeg to the game, because, well, we were playing the Jets, and a couple other Winnipegians, if you call them, that I know were also at the game, and one of them, she'd never been to the Bell Center to watch hockey, she's not a hockey fan.
Right.
And the first 5 minutes she texted me, she's like, oh, it's very quiet, a hockey game. And I wrote back, I know, and I was like, I know, we're very depressed people right now, it's not usually like this. And then, of course, Winnipeg scores a goal, and I'm like, ugh, I hate showing the Bell Center to people when it's like that.
Well, yeah, because
and then all of a sudden, that third period, or even the end of the second period, was just amazing.
So when did it kind of become apparent that this was going to be a special night?
Lars Eller's second goal. Then there was a Mike Camilleri goal. And then so quickly after was Lars Eller's third goal. And then it was out of control. It was out of control. There's a guy screaming into his phone, taking video of himself. That's when it really, really, really became out of control in there.
Now, I read your article today. It was up on the Montreal Bias, as well as your website, ladyloveshockey.com, about being there last night. So, and obviously, you were a little wrapped up in the emotion of a good game. How much has that kind of stuck with you through the day and going forward into Saturday now? And how are your feelings towards the team now?
Okay, well, first you should know I get very emotional. I get teary.
All right.
I'm a very emotional person. So when there's a lot of group emotion, I get teary. So I had that feeling the whole night. And then this morning, the old goal song kind of made the evening. And I found today all day, I click that old goal song, and it just, everyone was in a good mood in the city.
How perfect was that?
I think it's all because of the old goal song.
It was. It's the old goal song. I don't know why we were enduring U2's semi-hit for, I don't know, how much has that been, 5 years we've been having that U2 song,
yeah,
at least? I don't know why that has continued to be. I have in the past been advocating that a Montreal band such as Arcade Fire with a song like Wake Up should be the goal song if we're going to be going with any song.
Yeah.
But that was only in lieu of not bringing back the old goal song, which is, when I heard that last night, I was sitting there watching with a buddy, and after the first goal went in, we're, kind of half watching the game as I've started to do recently just because I don't want to get too invested. And I just got an iPhone, so I was very, very invested in my brand new iPhone. But as I'm sitting there half-assed listening to the game, I'm like, I go, wait a second. That's the old goal song. And so we rewound on PBR.
Everyone else
and
did the same thing too. Like paused for a second.
And then I knew we were scoring 7 for sure.
I know. I think it's a coming up song. It's a good song.
Oh, it's a fantastic song. I have no idea why it went away. And I mean, obviously, after what happened last night, they're going to stick with it going forward. So I'm very happy about that. Now, for the moment that Lars Eller came out and was skating around as he was named first star and was getting the crowd out, describe that to me a little bit from being inside the Bell Center.
Well, I'd love to stay for the stars, even if when we lose, because, mm-hmm. I don't know, I'm trying to get, I guess, my money's worth.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, that extra moment makes a big deal. So when he came out for the first star, I didn't expect him. I didn't know it was in his character to kind of bask in the glory.
Yeah.
But he did, and the people loved it. Sometimes people want a showman, and he has total showmanship there for that. Well, it was nice to see.
That's exactly it, and I was thinking about it today, and there's only been a few people who thought he was being a little too showboaty, and I don't know. Oh. Yeah, I don't care what they think about it anyways. But I was thinking about it a little bit today, and it just felt like that wasn't even just about Lars Eller and the fact that he had a night he's going to remember for the rest of his life. And it wasn't, you know, sure, the season's gone absolutely crap thus far, but it just felt like a moment for the fans at home and the team themselves to kind of bask in something good happening and just kind of soak it in for a second and maybe, you know, maybe take that forward and turn it into the momentum you were talking about in your morning after today.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You know what? There was a total connection between team and fans last night, and I think you're right, that Lars Eller was more than just, hey, look, I did so good tonight. It was like, hey, maybe we're back, and it was nice to hear you, and we'll do that to hear you more often, you know?
And what about thoughts on that?
We all went for a beer together.
What about thoughts on that, on the, I'm going to say shootout goal, but you know what I'm talking about. On the,
I keep calling it a shootout goal, too, but penalty shot.
Penalty shot's the word I'm looking for. Thank you.
First of all, I was when he got called on it and he had the penalty shot, I was like, there's some kind of fate or something playing today.
Yep.
Because as if he got called for a penalty shot, and he's coming in, and I was like, oh my God, he's missed his shot. And then he pulls, I don't even know what that was, like a spinorama.
It's officially called the
forward.
Spinorama, yes.
It was, I would never, again, I don't know the man, but it wasn't in his character to me. And when he scored, I don't think I've heard anything like that since playoffs 2009.
Really?
Yeah, for sure. Easily. It was so exciting that he scored that goal.
No, it was you know, it's definitely the best game to watch of the season for Habs fans, for obvious reasons. I mean, 7 goals, but just for everything else. And like you mentioned in your article, that, you know, we were all kind of in our forum yesterday. We were saying, you know, we were trying to find things to look forward to going forward for the rest of the season, because the playoffs, it's going to take miraculous hockey the rest of the way to make the playoffs. And so we're all kind of looking for these little moral victories, these little things that we can put and say, you know, let's build on this. Let's try and enjoy what we can. And last night, I mean, you don't get a better example of what we got. The young kid doing something amazing to re-energize the fans. It was a perfect storm of kind of what Habs fans needed at this point in the season to kind of go through the second part of it and, you know, make a playoff push. You know, in all honesty, the odds are very much stacked against him, but at least that is a kind of moral victory that I think we can look for the rest of the way, and hopefully it'll be one of those things. It reminded me of PK's coming out game against the Wild last season, where he had a hat trick, actually.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I remember the hat trick exactly like that, actually. Exactly like that. And it just, I don't know, it made the city a little bit more fun. I always relate this happiness of the city to the success of the Habs.
Well, there's a
the
direct
city
correlation.
A little bit happier today.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, I was in a better mood today. I kept thinking back to what happened. And I actually texted Sean this morning to say, last night I had a weird dream that Lars Eller somehow scored 4 goals, including a spinorama on the penalty shot. Like, come on, you told me yesterday morning that that's what was going to go. There's no way I would have believed you that was going to go down last night.
You know what, actually, I don't gamble a lot, but I decided yesterday for some reason to bet on some games from Modog.
All right.
And I bet, pardon?
I said, all right.
Yeah, I know. Well, okay, it's going somewhere important, you'll see.
Oh, no, I'm following. I'm in.
I did a parlay, right? I guess it picks 3
yeah.
games or whatever, and you have to win all 3. So I saw Montreal-Winnipeg, and I chose the under of 5.5 goals. Oh. And then that Boston would win by 2 goals, and that San Jose would win by 2 goals. And when Montreal made it 4-2, part of me was a little bit disappointed because I saw the Boston game, and I knew that I was going to win that one.
Yeah.
But then when they scored the 5th, the 6th, and the 7th, I could have lost $1,000,000 yesterday. It would have been worth it. It was so much fun.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was very... Definitely when I saw your article up this morning on your site, I was very jealous that you were in the house for that. I don't know if I'm seems unlikely that I'll get to the Bell Centre for a game this season, but if there's
one, really?
Well, it's I'm living in Toronto, so it's tough to...
Oh, you're living in Toronto.
Tough,
true,
tough
eh?
To get
I
there.
I keep forgetting.
Yeah, well, it slips the mind sometimes.
Do you get to go to a Toronto-Montreal game, maybe?
Well, this is what I was considering. Was going, and I was looking earlier in the season and getting tickets, and... But I don't. It's going to be like $150 if I go to a game at the ACC, and I'd be fine with that. I've spent that kind of money on games before. It's not a, you know, it's so much fun that it's worth it. But I don't. This season, and the way things were going, I don't want to drop that kind of cash to walk out of the ACC in Leafs land. You know, hanging my head low. I don't really want to drop that kind of cash to make myself extra sad. So I was completely looking into getting tickets for the upcoming Leafs Habs game, but the way things went through December, I kind of dissuaded myself.
I know. You know what? I even as a Montrealer, sometimes I'm like, oh, is it worth it to pay the $100? Like my seats that I buy were in the white, so they're about $100
yeah.
a ticket.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's totally not, like, I can't believe I just wasted $200.
Well, the Bell Centre felt like it had kind of lost its luster through a good stretch until last night. That, you know, that's one of those games that I think if you paid $500 just to be there for a night like that, you know, nobody, come on, you're not going to forget that.
No, never.
I was listening.
I quit to, like, I wish I could have been, remember when they came back against the Rangers?
Yeah, that game. I mean,
that's a game I also would have paid, like, $500 to go to.
I watched that game by myself on TV, and that game is just burned into my memory. That's how amazing that game was. Like,
I know.
It was fantastic. But, no, last night's is going to be, especially for Lars Eller and, you know, for Habs fans,
yeah.
Even if the season continues along the theme that it's gone all the way, at least we've got that kind of moment from the 2011-2012 season to own. So going forward, let's get to that. Going forward, you were pumped this morning. You seem still like you're pretty pumped. You're looking forward to Saturday's game. But what do you think the Habs need to do going from here to the end?
I just hope that they carry that feeling that they had at the end of last night's game into it. Because like I said, it is momentum. I don't feel that at this high of a level, there's such a huge gap. I mean, obviously, there's the elite.
Yeah.
But in general, it's sometimes it's just momentum. They must have been so happy to come in, and I think they did off-ice work. That's why it must have been a fun day at the training facility.
Oh, yeah.
Probably a little looser and...
Teasing Eller about milking it. Yeah. Oh, for sure. No question. I mean, I know Price was even on the ice today. Budai was in nets, and Price was skating, no equipment, just taking shots like a skater.
I love that he does that.
Apparently, he's got game when if he comes out of the crease.
I bet he does. I bet sometimes I wonder if we should dress him as a forward. See what would happen.
We should. Yeah, we got to pull something like out of the Mighty Ducks movies.
Just for fun, if there was some kind of free non-counting game, just to see how he would do.
I agree. My buddy Alex and
he's
I actually...
Big. He's a big guy.
Oh, he's huge. And, I mean, he's got a great shot. I'm convinced that he's scoring before the end of his career. I'm absolutely convinced. And he wants to.
Oh,
I mean,
hope so.
Every time there's an... Not every time there's an empty net, but many times when you see an empty net, he's looking for it. There's no question he's looking for it. And I think he's going to get one before all's said and done. All right, I know you got a birthday dinner to get to.
I do.
So enjoy that. Continue to bask in the glory of Lars Eller's 4 goals. And hopefully come Saturday, we can add 2 wins together, which at this point would feel like a fantastic win streak for this team.
I know. Imagine it would be a huge streak for us.
2 wins. My God. 4 points in 2 games. We can dream, Steph. We can dream.
Plan the parade.
Exactly. I live in Toronto. I'm starting to talk like a Torontonian here. All right. Well, thanks a lot for chatting. Happy New Year. I guess this is it's our first podcast in 2012, and hopefully 2012 continues for the Habs the way it started.
Yes, I agree.
All right. Sounds
Have
good.
Have a great night.
Have a good one. once again, thanks to Steph Darwish, who was she was at that game last night.
Yeah, and there hasn't been a whole lot to cheer about at the Bell Center.
And our boy Joey Z, who contributes not enough, Joey, was also at that game last night. Well, let's actually take a moment and congratulate Joey, who got engaged at the stroke of midnight heading into 2012.
Pretty balling stuff by our occasional contributor to the
very balling, very balling, Joey. So he's had a good 2012 so far.
He's off to a good start.
All right, good job,
first,
Joey.
First four goal performance in Bell Center history.
That makes sense.
Yeah, the last, as we said, Jan Boulos was the last Hab to score four, which, I mean, honestly, you could have given me 100 guesses, and I never would have guessed that.
Did you forget? Because honestly, I forgot Boulos was on the team.
I did too. And after I saw the stat, I sort of vaguely remembered the game. But you literally could have given me 100 guesses, and I never would have ever guessed
that. Yeah, for sure.
In a million years. But yeah, so they're saying first four-goal game since Boulos, and first four-goal game at home since Brian Bello's Safari Planet back in the Cup.
Oh my God, best nickname ever. My God, I wish that existed back then. Safari Planet. Oh, made my day right there. I'm sorry. I was listening to TSN 990 earlier today, and they gave kind of the list of every Hab who'd ever had a 4-plus goal game in their career, and Boulos is really the only standout, you know, kind of what the hell. Everyone else who's ever scored four goals in a Habs uniform makes sense. So, you know, all things considered, this bodes well for our boy Eller.
Yeah, it was a really memorable night, and they've been few and far between, so.
And Yaroslav Halak is a backup in St. Louis.
Yeah, is there anyone out there still
There is. I saw on Twitter today some people still defending that move. I mean, your hockey watching license should be taken away if you're still advocating that that was a poor deal.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right, let's finish this bad boy up. You want to get into the three stars?
Let's do that. Shall I go first?
Or do you want to take a look at the schedule first?
Yeah, let's take a look at the schedule. So, looking forward, as we mentioned, Saturday, January 7th, Tampa Bay is in town.
Guy Boucher,
Vincent Lecavier, and the rest of them are in town for a battle between two kind of disappointing squads.
These are the two teams that took the Bruins to Game 7s, and in Montreal's case, overtime, and, you know, an equally exciting game between TB and Boston, and this season, you know, what's wrong with the Lightning?
It's got to come down to goaltending because, I mean, obviously they've got the talent in place, but I think, you know, they rolled the dice with Roleson and thought that he had one more year left in him, and he's just too old at this point. And you hear that Stevie Y is making some calls around the league. You know, Josh Harding rumored to be headed there. There's a couple of other goalies he might be interested in, but
I think Harding's a good fit there.
I think he's a great fit there, and I mean, there's so much talent on that Tampa Bay team that I still kind of think they might be able to turn it around. Yeah. I think they're much more likely to turn things around than Montreal is. But same thing. I mean, I think they're maybe a point behind Montreal or a point above Montreal, but the math's getting pretty tough for the Lightning as well.
It's going to be...
They both have 37 points. Tampa has two games in hand. But, you know, the math for both teams is pretty tricky.
Yeah, no, Saturday's game, I get the sense the Bell Center is going to have it up to at least an 8. I'd say an 8 at the beginning of the game, and should things start going Montreal's way, that's a big game, all things considered, on Saturday.
Yeah, it is. So that's what we got Saturday. Tuesday, speaking of Yaroslav Halak,
he's back and he's starting.
He's back, I would assume.
No, it's been announced that he's starting. I mean, it could change, but for now, he is starting.
Okay, so that makes sense.
I hope Lars scores again. A couple goals for Eller on Halak. Oh boy. All you idiots. Suck
maybe
it.
A couple more dildos thrown on the ice for good measure.
What if that becomes a thing?
That becomes a thing.
It's just occurred to me this could become a thing. Fantastic.
Miami, they have rats. Here we have sex toys. So that's what we've got Tuesday. Thursday, big rivalry game against the Bruins. And then we play both Saturday and Sunday. This is the 14th and the 15th that I'm talking about. Saturday at home against the Sens, Sunday at home against the Rangers.
So it's a tough road ahead. But I mean, the way Montreal's played, everything's been tough this season. So let's see what happens. I'm not, you know, obviously at this point, every game becomes make or break. As Georgia said a couple days ago, every game is game seven at this point. Every point's going to matter if they want any chance of managing to get into the playoffs. It's going to be one of those scenarios like we've seen the Leafs in the past and even the Devils last year, where you got to be one of the top two or three, even let's say top five if we're being generous. You have to have one of the top five records in the final half of the season if you want to climb out of the basement that Montreal's got themselves into this point.
Yeah, we've said this for weeks now. I've pretty much given up hope. If they do turn things around, that's a bonus.
But. Yeah, exactly. But I've come to terms with it, I feel.
Yeah, likewise. I mean, you know, almost out of necessity.
That's exactly it. It's fan necessity that we've come to terms with it. All right, so that's what we got going forward. Let's reflect back and hand out our stars. I give you take lead on your third star first.
Yeah, well, thank you. Third star of the week, Mr. Mike Camilleri. Probably my favorite player on the team, so it was frustrating to watch him sort of struggle through the first half of the season, but as we mentioned earlier, he's starting to heat up, it looks like, and we know what he's capable of when he heats up. He had a goal last night. He's got, I think, what, three in his last five or something. I don't have the stats in front of me, but he's starting to heat up. He's starting to look like the old Camilleri, and I think the second half of the season is obviously going to be much better than the first, and I think, you know, like I said earlier in the podcast, when all is said and done, he's going to have a nice 25-goal season under his belt, as per usual.
I can agree. All right, I'm giving my third star to the man we've called the future captain on this podcast, and we're not alone in calling him the future captain. He inked the deal, he said things I've liked, and just because he's gorgeous, Josh Georges is my third star this week, mainly for the contract alone and the fact that I was very worried when Cabrelle came in. Actually, I kind of talked myself into the fact that the Cabrelle deal might mean no Josh Georges, so the fact that he's got a lengthy deal like that, I feel very good about it. Third star to Georges.
You think they overpaid?
No, I don't.
Fair enough. When I saw the dollar number, I said, well, that's a little...
Yeah, but next season, that's a little much, but in 6 years, come on, we'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not... Obviously, I like the signing. It's a little higher than I would have anticipated, but, I mean...
You have to pay a little more in Montreal.
Yeah, you do, and I don't know if any Habs fan's going to... You know, I don't know how you
It's not going to break the bank the way Scott Gomez is.
No, there's no way it turns into an albatross of a contract.
No, exactly. I'm fine with anything that doesn't turn into an albatross at this point.
My second star of the week, because I'm contractually obligated to make him my second
star.
Have
you really? Beautiful.
I did it.
I didn't know you were going to. Nice.
Number two, Erik Cole.
Oh, fantastic. We've talked about him at length in this, but that's a great second star.
It is. The thing I like about Cole is that, and I hate trying to read too much into body language, but you do get the sense that he enjoys playing in Montreal.
And oh, for sure.
It hasn't been a very enjoyable season for anyone, but... You always worry with these free agent signings that, you know, maybe he didn't really want to come here, but he just couldn't say no to the dollar amount. But I don't get the sense that that's the case with Cole. You know, he always said he loved playing in Montreal, and you just get a sense that after whatever it was, 6-8 years of sort of toiling away in obscurity in Carolina, that he likes playing in a city that actually cares and playing in a building where there's so much energy when the team's playing well.
And just to add to that, I mean, this is a guy who... Coming in, I've heard multiple experts, so-called experts, say this was the worst free agent signing of the offseason. They always like to rank, you know, which team got hosed. And the general consent, not the general, but there was a good number of people saying that the Cole signing by Montreal was the signing that the team would come back to very much regret the most. And instead... If there's one player that Montreal's having a love fest with this year, it's Erik Cole. I can't find a single person besides my mother who, for some reason, she's not completely warmed up to Cole yet. She takes a little while to come around to players and is very upset when players get traded. All it takes is the wearing the Habs logo on your chest for a few seasons, and she's decided you're good or bad, no matter what you actually do on or off the ice. So she's a little slow on Cole. Come on, Shell, come around on that one. But everybody besides my mom is pretty cool with Eric Cole, and to the point of, the majority of people absolutely loving the guy and thinking, my God, it's been so long since we've had a hockey player who not only has a little size and but also skill and then passion to go with it. It's fantastic. So, have we not given him a star at any point?
I think we've managed to squeeze him into the top three every week, and deservedly so. I mean,
exactly.
It's a bit of a running gag, but I think he deserves it.
No, and to bring it back around to what I was starting to say, considering all the negativity that came towards this signing, in a city that loves hitting on the negative, as we well know, people love Eric Cole. So, that's a huge win, and we've given him the star every week, and probably because he deserves it. My second star... I don't have a name this week for who my second star is because I don't know who made this decision.
Dildo thrower?
Yep, dildo thrower. I should have. I didn't even think of the fantastic dildo thrower. No, whoever decided to dump Elevation and return us to the glory that is the old Habs goal song... You're my second star of the week. I mean, even if the Habs had lost last night, just knowing that that song was back, that was a huge moment for me. I was very happy about it. So that's my second star. Whoever made that decision, fantastic decision.
Agreed. There's some things you don't mess with, and it's nice to have it back.
Also, I mean, I know you're a U2 fan, right?
I am, yeah.
But on the grand scheme of U2, where the hell does Elevation rank as one of their fantastic songs?
Yeah, like I like U2. I never got the whole sort of indie pitchfork backlash against them, but it was always a weird choice for a goal song. It's like, I don't know, I think they just, Vertigo came out and they played it after goal ones, and like, all right, well, that's it. That's our goal song from now on.
Stupid call. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun is way better.
Whatever, you got to go with the old school goal song. It's so nice to have it back.
Whatever the name of it really is, in my mind, it's called dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, so... Whoever made that choice, good on. They were doing. Apparently, the Kiss cam is back as well at the Bell Center, which I don't know. That's necessary, but
that I can take or leave. But.
Exactly, but second star to that decision.
Very nice, and we didn't go over our three stars before the podcast. I assume we have the same.
We have the same.
We do, and obviously Mr. Eller.
Let me say it first.
Okay.
François Beauchemin.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Lars Eller, 4-goal performance, and, he could have a very, very good NHL career and never replicate what he did on Wednesday night. And, that's fine. Maybe we never see this out of him again. But I don't get the sense that it's, a complete Jan Boulas-like fluke. I've liked him for a while now, and he's still growing. He's still maturing. But there are those flashes, and I think he's a nice part of the team moving forward.
And I mean, he doubled his goal performance on the season in a single night, which is absolutely ridiculous. But at the same time, like, this is, you felt he was getting unlucky throughout the season up to now in terms of his chances. And last night, everything went his way. And the confidence, the absolute confidence, and Steph alluded to this when I talked to her, to decide that spinorama. I mean, that only comes from already having a hat trick. To pull that move, not in a, this wasn't a shootout where, maybe you're the fifth or sixth shooter and you try something a little fancy. This was a penalty shot. This is a goal. This is going in your stat line. To have the confidence at that point, based on everything that was going on at the Bell Center, based on the crowd being behind him, to take that shot, I mean, fantastic spinorama. And like you said, he could have a stellar career, kind of the ceiling that we were talking about, where he's an all-star a few times and a great player going forward, and you're still not going to have a night like this. I mean, there are guys in the Hall of Fame who never had a night like what happened against Winnipeg. So yeah, obviously, no question about it, Lars Eller is the number one star. He's the high point, as we talked about, kind of PK Subban's goal to tie things in Game 7 against Boston being the highlight of 2011. there's a chance that what happened on Wednesday night against the Jets could easily stand as the high point of the 2012 run of the Canadiens, no matter where that takes us.
Yeah, and the Bell Center really needed that. The fans they needed really it. The team did. Really needed it. Yep. And, you know, I think it's, in a sense, probably going to be a footnote to a disappointing season. I don't know if it's the turning point where everything turns around.
I don't think so. I really don't.
But to see, at least, you know, see the place hopping like it was last night and to have that memorable moment and then, like you said, capped off with the spin-a-rama and to have that flash and that confidence and, you know, just at least for one night the team was playing at the absolute apex of its powers and you know, the fans were legitimately behind the team and you're able to block out all the crap and all the noise that's been surrounding the team. And just to have that night was something that I think everyone kind of needed. It was pretty cathartic.
It was very cathartic, and in a good way, not in the cathartic way we've used this podcast for in the past where we just want to rant and hate. And, you know, I know Jacques Martin is gone now, and you don't want to hark back to it too much, but I couldn't help but think as soon as Eller pulled that move last night, think back to Travis Moen taking a shootout shot and knowing that Lars Eller had been on that bench. Even if he didn't have a spinorama in his back pocket at that point in time. Come on. How could this kid not have been out there? I mean, clearly he's got a little bit of talent in this kind of thing. So, as we said earlier, there hasn't been a huge change under Randy Cunningworth. Camilleri scoring more tells me that the air has changed somewhat in the room. The fact that they decided to play pissed off on Wednesday night tells me that there's a little bit of a change. As we've said, and I'll say it once more, I don't think this season's going to get saved. We're not headed to the playoffs. I just don't believe that. But to hark back to the forum that we posted on the Montreal Bias yesterday, what kind of little shining moments can we look forward to? We said the young guys and seeing some progression. And as I said to Steph earlier in the podcast, what happened on Wednesday against the Jets reminded me a little bit of Subban with his hat trick against the Wild. It feels like one of those coming out games. And, you know, you can't help but build on a game like that no matter who you are, except unless you're Jan Boulos, I guess. And that'll do it.
Not quite.
No, you got one. What do you got? Oh, the douche.
Well, that'll do it.
I forgot about the douche. My God, I forgot about the douche. I look forward to it day in and day out, and I almost forgot about it. My apologies. Okay, I want to douche first. No, you douche first. You know what? I want to douche first, but I feel you should douche first.
How noble of you.
I just want to say douche as many times as I can.
My douche.
Hey. What are you doing?
Oh, I jumped the gun there, didn't I?
Jesus. Sean?
Yes.
Drop a douche.
Sorry about that. So my douche of the week, Mr. Chris Bartsch of the Florida Panthers, allegedly, or I guess more than allegedly, since he's got suspended, directed a slur, which I think we can all probably guess what that was, towards PK Subban.
Okay, but here's what I'm hearing. It wasn't the word that we're all guessing it was. Apparently, this is, you know, as hearsay as anything else. So, apparently, he asked Subban because I guess Subban fell at some point. I didn't even see that game. If he slipped on a banana peel is apparently what was said.
I guess that's mildly less offensive, but
not really.
He's not really.
It's no, in the he same.
Still gets the douche of the week. And like I said, I guess none of us were on the ice, so we don't know. But the fact that the NHL suspended him a game for it is a pretty strong indication that they have some proof that something was said. So, I don't really need to say anything beyond that. I mean, the guy used a racial slur on the ice, and for that, you get the douche of the week.
And I know we have our segue, so go ahead.
Zach?
Yes, Sean.
Drop a douche.
All right. Allow me to drop. In the same direction you douched, mine's going to go towards the NHL on this one and the fact that he only got one game for this. Because, as you said, the fact that the NHL suspended him for a game clearly indicates, at least would seem to strongly indicate, since the F word, not fuck, I can say fuck, the other F word that I won't use was clearly used earlier in this season by Wayne Simmonds, and there was no suspension because they couldn't quite prove it, that it was said, nobody remembers it right, or something along those lines. the fact that that happened like that and they couldn't suspend Simmons based on that tells me that this incident, there was enough evidence. One game? I thought we were beyond that. I mean, this is absolute bullshit, one game. And I don't care. The Florida Panthers, I couldn't care where they're on the standings. I've barely ever heard of this guy before. I don't care about him. But the fact that James Wisniewski got two games for miming a blowjob, and this guy gets one game for an obviously racial slur. I mean, come on, NHL. Let's figure our shit out at this point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, fair enough. And I guess you'd have to go back and look at what the precedent was, because unfortunately, there's the, you know, this isn't the first time this has happened.
So. No, it's not. But I mean, at the same time, and I mean, Simmons involved in another incident, which I think, and I'm with this, I side with the guy who threw the banana in the Simmons incident, that was purely unfortunate coincidence for him, because I believe his testimony, I saw him speak, and he, you know, this was something that when it went down, it kind of got blown completely, not out of proportion, but out of context, because he threw what he had with him, and it, you know, in the end, it turned out to be a banana. So, but the fact is,
at least it wasn't a dildo.
And, well, no, a dildo.
I guess
better.
A dildo would have been better.
Dildo's much better. Okay, for those
but
listening,
but having a
at
banana
home,
on you is a
that's its own thing. But I'm just saying, one game. I mean, the NHL. Come on, if you can prove that he said that, which if you're suspending him from a game, I think then you must have sufficient proof. At least the other Simmons incidents indicates that. You're the NHL, for crying out loud. Say, no, we're not going to deal with this. You can't say things like that. You can say plenty on the ice. But there's certain things that we're not going to... There's a line drawn in the sand, and let's... Racism? Come on. Aren't we past that line? One game? If he said it, and everyone seems to think he said it, then you've got to give more than one game. So my douche goes to... I don't know if Shanahan makes a decision on that thing or not, but whoever it is making the decision on only one game for him, you're my douche.
Very fair.
Well, who's going to argue against me in this case?
Oh, yeah.
Pro-racism? Come on, that was a win for me. Slam dunk.
All right. I'd like to make my pro-racism rebuttal right now.
All right, all things considered, I'm leaving this podcast in a much better place than I have in a while. I think we need to thank Lars Eller once again for that.
Yeah, like we've said, the bright spots have been few and far between, so it's nice to have a happy-ish podcast, even if, you know, the team's still going nowhere.
And we'll be back next week. We won't take as much time on. We need a little holiday, yeah, seasoning.
Indeed.
All right, let's get out of here.
I got nothing to add, but
yeah, I noticed. Go ahead, do your thing.
Thanks for listening. Subscribe on iTunes. Feel free to leave comments. Feel free to hit us up on the Twitter machine. Email us. We love the feedback. So thanks again for listening.
Yeah, please feel free to comment. We want to hear from you out there. Thanks again for listening. That guy, he's Sean O'Neill. I'm Zach Finos. And this was the 2 from the Montreal Bias.com. Bye, folks.